Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We are rebroadcast on A2Zen.fm, and you'll need to check their schedule for the specific times and days that the program is replayed, and it's replayed numerous times. And then we archive this program at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we thank you so much for joining us here on the program. As we are often, when I think of the holidays and how quickly they seem to come around, I use the term we are hurtling, careening, whatever you want. It's going so fast. And then I've been through 52 holidays as far as wintertime, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. Never really celebrated Hanukkah, although I'm quite intrigued by some of the other holidays of the other belief systems and religions and so forth. And maybe we'll get into that one of these days. But one of the interesting things that I am quite interested in that we're going to be talking about today has to do with the events that precede the meal, regardless of what those are, in terms of ceremony and a tradition. As I've said before, I'm very, very much interested in ritual and ceremony. And in the case of my family, as I was growing up, I'm going to share with you something that was said not just at Thanksgiving, because actually the Thanksgiving meal was a little different, as was the Christmas, but it was said every time we sat down for a meal. And many of you probably have heard this or even have said this many, many times before. Now, I say this only as a point of reference, and that is, goes like this, not something like this, but exactly like this. Bless us, O Lord, and these thy gifts, which we are about to receive from thy bounty through Christ our Lord. Amen. Now, being raised, born and raised a Catholic, that was the prayer, the grace that was said by my father, and as we got older, by each one of us at the, specifically the evening meal. And that is the subject, not that specific prayer, but the subject of grace. Bless This Food is the title of the book, and my guest is the author, Adrian Butash. I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program.
My pleasure, Richard.
And grace, obviously, is important to you. Giving thanks, if you will, and in all of the other terms that we would use to describe these utterances, because they're not necessarily all prayers,
right?
But they are all in the context of acknowledging the food we're about to eat and where it's come from, whether it's God or the universal power or Mother Earth or however we want to look at
it. Or cornfield or rice terrace.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm curious as to why this is important to you. What difference does this make if we say anything or we don't say anything?
Well, let me go back to the blessing you've recited all your life, which is the same one I recited, Bless Us, O Lord. And I got bored with that. And about 10 years ago, I was in Harvard at the Widener Library, and I decided to look for a prayer book such as Bless This Food. Mm-hmm. And my searches on their extensive 22 universities around the world database came back: consult the Mahabharata, consult the Bhagavad Gita. So I had that aha moment, Richard, where the book doesn't exist, I'll write it. So that very prayer that you and I have intoned all our lives led to the birth of Bless This Food.
What I find interesting as well is when you begin the process, and this becomes more of a mental game of sort of deconstructing and figuring out, okay, well, why was this word used? What does this word mean in this context and so forth? Especially when you're talking about those of other languages and belief systems. So you have prayers in here or utterances. Again, I'm not exactly sure. Blessings, maybe a better way to put it, because you title this Bless This Food, from all over the world. Christian and Jewish and Muslim, Hindu, and I'm sure from the continent of Africa and China and Asia and on and on and on.
It's all there. And what's unique is 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 years ago, the peoples in those lands were blessing the Lord, or the sun god in that case, for the provenance of the earth, for food. Mm-hmm. So it's one of the earliest notions of gratitude by all cultures going back 3,000, 5,000, 7,000 years. And I have some prayers in here which are that old.
Wow.
I call them prayers, blessings.
Right.
Respect for the environment and the food and the gratitude for surviving in a wicked world.
Well, there would be those who would say, yes, indeed, that is where we are living today. And we can use all of the grace and all of the prayers. I remember hearing, too, that the men and women who occupy the various monastic cloisters and so forth around the world, they are the ones that are actually holding the world together. And if they all stopped in unison, this world would just fall apart.
I understand that. It's an interesting thought.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that that's literal, but nonetheless, I am grateful for their offering up for on our behalf.
Right.
When we don't seem to be able to find the time to do that, sometimes not even at the beginning of a meal, or even when you sit down, whether it's at the McDonald's or at the Bacara here in Santa Barbara or anywhere else, or in with your family,
yeah,
or even by yourself.
Well, what's unique about the family gathering at the table is it's a unique opportunity to do a grace, a silent grace. You can just hold hands. It can be extemporaneous. Or in the case of Bless This Food, you can pass the book. And what's interesting to me is if a child can read, let's say age 4 or 5, mm-hmm, you can give the book to the child who now can lead the family in a grace. They can flip through it before dinner and choose one they like. I have graces in here in American Sign Language, so that the opportunity for the child to suddenly be at the head of the table rather than a quiet participant, now suddenly they have a leading role. And I've gotten lots of mail over the years that application of the book to children who can read has been very rewarding.
In talking with people about this upcoming interview, people have shared with me how one woman shared with me actually how her grandfather, when they went to holiday dinners at his place,
yep,
he was the only one who was to offer the blessing,
right,
because it was his home,
yep,
and it was his gathering, so he would offer the blessing. And they just, and that was fine.
Right.
And it was because he took that role on.
Yeah, the patriarchal leadership is to be understood.
And I find that, I think that, in my family, of course, as we began to get older, my siblings and I, you know, we were given the opportunity, you know, Richard or Michael or Jeanette or Lane or Mary, what have you,
right,
go ahead and you say grace. And it would be the same prayer. But at the holidays, we would throw in a little extra.
Sure.
You know, I remember going through in the 70s, and I was born and raised in Phoenix. We had rain. Usually on Thanksgiving and or Christmas, but especially New Year's. And we even sat down for turkey dinner on New Year's,
yeah,
which was interesting. And we would be thankful for the rain and the cool weather and
that's right,
and the refreshing storm that was revivifying all of the plants and so forth. And our relatives who might be sharing dinner with us,
mm-hmm,
or if we went down to the towns where my grandparents used to live,
right,
same kind of thing. And sometimes you'd have large groups of people.
Yeah.
But there was no argument. There was no discourse over what prayer should be said.
Mm-hmm.
If you were going to offer the blessing, it was yours.
Lovely.
And I wonder if that's still the same today, because now we have such a mix, even within our own families, of beliefs.
Well, that's interesting because in the several years since the book has been out, I've gotten hundreds of emails and letters saying the book has brought the family together, children can participate. And it's also a lovely way, Richard, to, if you have a guest at the table, give them the book. So they're not put on the spot. They can flip through it just like a child and mm-hmm, choose a grace and anyone applies.
Tell me about your own experiences in regards to how you have felt how offering a blessing at a meal, whether solo or in group, has affected you.
Well, it's been a very humbling experience because I have a family, quite an extended family, and of course they have the book. But grace has always been part of our family life. I was raised Catholic, so the grace that you intoned in the beginning was the one that we uttered throughout my lifetime until I got bored with it, mm-hmm, which led me to this book. But I do feel that when you have the opportunity to be together with friends or family, to just hold hands and smile and be thankful is a very wonderful and rewarding experience. Yeah. Doesn't have to be a formal grace or blessing, but just this acknowledgement that we're here together for this short time on earth. We're thankful for our friendship and our family, and that unspoken love, if you will, is what is really lovely.
You know how siblings can be as they're growing up.
Yeah.
And it always seemed, and this you brought this to my recollection, that we would always hold hands.
Yeah.
Even on those days prior to dinner when we're out playing, when we would be at odds with one another, even though we would sort of begrudgingly reach our hand out.
Right.
Because mom and dad would not allow you not to. I mean, it was just, you got to reconnect.
Yes, indeed. Well, in my experience, the holidays, we always played touch football and it got rough and whatnot. But when it came time to come inside and just relax, we were suddenly different people. We were surrounded by love. We put our hands out. We touched and felt. We hugged. And that warm memory is what spontaneously led me to research this book.
Yeah. Now, it's obvious what the differences are in these 160 different blessings. And it may also be obvious as to what the similarities are, but I actually would like you to address them. But from the context of as you began to compile these, and obviously I'm sure you've read these numerous times.
Indeed.
How they began to affect or change or impact you?
That's an interesting question. The thing that really, really impacted me was how old the intonations by cultures thanking the deities for food and survival go back 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 years. And so, you know, we think of grace, it's contemporary, but the cultures around the world have always been thankful for survival, and that meant food, whether it was grown or hunted. And I will always remember, for example, being in the Philippines in the Banaue rice terraces near Luzon. They're 7,000 years old. Mm. And the Igorot Indians, who are the indigenous peoples of that territory, Igorot means people of the mountain, they have, I just want to cite this here, they had what they called the spirit of the rice fields. So the Banaue rice fields are 6,000 years old. And I stood there, was absolutely awestruck, and then doing some research, found some of the cultural leaders of the tribes and got this blessing, which is in the book. And if I may, just let me read 4 lines of the 10 lines of that particular poem.
Please.
So, we will remember and honor you in the days to come, meaning the supreme deity. We who partake of this abundant food rejoice with those who rejoice and live long lives. This is our heart's desire and what words express. So let us feast. 7,000-year-old expression of gratitude. Mm-hmm. So in the book, I've covered practically, if not all, of the main cultures and the principal religions. And they all have a common reverence for food and thankfulness for our survival and the acknowledgement that the Lord is responsible for giving us the food, even if we grow it or harvest it.
You know, I've asked the question on several different programs in the last year about should the human race continue on? In other words, should we continue reproducing? Because we don't seem to be really progressing. But it sounds to me like these blessings, these tomes, if you will, show how we have maintained a certain level, if you will, of reverence and or civility towards one another, even if it's just in those brief moments of a meal and so forth, that maybe there is still hope for the human race.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, the spark of humanity is bright and beautiful, even though we're surrounded by treachery and bad news. But the mainstream of the history of mankind is goodness. You know, if you take the crimes aside, it's raising the family, being grateful, protecting the family, passing down heritage. What's interesting about the graces, they can be spoken or passed down through the families we've discussed. Or in the case of this book, you get the the sense of how far back in time, thousands of years, we go back, which I've documented with reverence for food and thankfulness for survival. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. And it was rough 6,000-7,000 years ago. You know, you were lucky if you made it to 25 or 30 or 35.
Or even earlier. There are the caves in Lascaux, France. They're 35,000 years old. Now, what is painted on those walls? We've all seen pictures of it. There's handprints, which are symbolical to we're together here as humans, and the animals that they hunted, bison, wild deer, et cetera, et cetera. And I submit that that's a blessing pictorial for surviving in that rather crazy and wild culture 35,000 years ago.
Wow. Now, there are also those who have been able to uncover human civilizations that go back even further. You know, I mean, I'm sure that you're aware of that as well. And I'm sure that they probably had these types of things as well. But unfortunately, the records have been lost just due to time.
Indeed. I mean, it's hard to survive in this world without some recognition that it's a greater power that's guiding us through life and giving us the food, whether we're hunter-gatherers or we live in a culture that has convenience for food. So the important thing, having traveled the world and been to many of the countries that I cite in the book, is the common bond of all mankind, the joy of the family, and the recognition of friends who have passed on and family members who have passed on, mentioning them at the table, whether you're in the woods or in a Park Avenue apartment.
Yeah. I know that there have been some meals that I have participated in where we have gone through the process of being thankful for those who have passed on, but we're thankful for their part in our lives and what they gave us in regards to, say, maybe their legacy kind of thing too.
Yes. Yeah.
This is a legacy of sorts. I mean, not only this book in terms of your legacy to your family, as well as to all of us.
Right.
Because it is available online to purchase it. There's an e-version, I believe.
Yes, Amazon has it, and BN.com, BarnesandNobles.com.
But this is sort of a way of extending your own existence.
Indeed.
Far beyond
yeah.
your physical existence here.
Richard, there's a lovely prayer, it's number 72, and just the...
Everyone turn in your hymnals.
Walter Rauschenberg. He has a beautiful opening line. A circle of friends is a blessed thing. Sweet is the breaking of bread with friends. And then it goes on for six or eight more lines. But mm-hmm. a circle of friends is a blessed thing. I find that so inspirational. He was a Baptist minister who... his parish was Hell's Kitchen in New York City. Very, very rugged existence. Walter Rauschenberg. A circle of friends is a blessed thing.
I love that. And by the way, I just happened to, as I'm flipping through here as well, and I believe you have it labeled as, oh no, these are the signs. I just noticed in the back of the book various symbols, I can't think of the term.
American Sign Language.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The American Sign Language in the back of the book so that people can then pray these prayers, signing them.
Absolutely. I have two versions of that, Richard. One is for the children, slightly simplified, and the adult version in ASL, American Sign Language.
Oh, yes, you hear it at the bottom. I actually learned sign language. My first wife, who was totally blind, we wanted to try an experiment in terms of, and this is sort of a sidebar here in our conversation.
Yeah.
We wanted each of us have a day of silence. Well, for me to have a day of silence was going to be next to impossible because she needed me to be able to verbalize things.
Of course.
Her, not a problem. So I learned sign language, and that's how I was able to communicate with her. And in turn, her with me.
Sure.
And I don't remember much of it anymore because I stopped using it. But again, I think that the ability to be able to communicate these prayers, these blessings, I want to come up with one word that describes all of them. Not just the 160, because these are just 160 that you put together in this volume. I
yes.
mean, there are probably thousands.
Oh, indeed.
That
indeed.
You had to say, no, I don't have room. Maybe I will come out with volume 2 and volume 3.
Volume 2 is in works.
Oh, it is. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. It's 2 years away, but we've had a very strong interest in the book over the last several years, and it's available online. And
what a great compendium to have when you reach the various holidays. Like I was sharing at the beginning of the program how I have never celebrated Hanukkah. I remember talking to one of my Jewish friends years ago about it, and they said, well, I appreciate that, but it's not really a big deal. I mean, as far as all of the Jewish holidays go, it's really kind of a minor holiday, you know? And I, of course, I know the story, but it's just one of those things where, you know, as we become acquainted with different ways of different beliefs and different ways of living and thinking and so forth, I become more interested in wanting to maybe not become a Jew or become a Muslim or I was a Baha'i for, I think, a year and a half, seriously, or any of the other religions, Hindu, Buddhist, and so forth. But I would like to at least have a taste on this program. And interestingly enough, I'm sure you've heard before, we here at Tell Me Your Story, we put out a smorgasbord.
Mm-hmm.
And you come and you take what you want.
Yes.
Leave the rest. Just take what resonates with you, what tastes good to you, if you will, and enjoy it. And so that's one of the things that has so intrigued me. I still remember a research project I did for one of my bosses years ago. After finishing the research project or what have you, the first question out of his mouth was, "Are you a Muslim?" Now, I've shared this story with others and say, well, you know, he can't ask you that. I said, well, doesn't matter. He did. And I said, no, I'm not a Muslim, but I'm curious.
Mm-hmm.
I am curious. I would love to be able to read a very accurate English translation of the Quran or learn the language of the Quran and read it for myself.
Ambitious, but worthy.
To know what it says instead of, oh, well, this gentleman over here says that this is what it says. Well, that's his understanding of it, but it's not mine. And it's the same thing with the Bible and so forth.
Well, there's so many versions of all the great books in culture. But let me, in terms of this Christian, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, whatever, Gandhi, Mohandas Gandhi, died in 1948. So just briefly, he was the Indian spiritual leader and had a very wonderful overview of Christianity, Muslim, Hindi, etc. So later in his life, he was asked whether he was a Hindu. He replied, yes, I am. I'm also a Christian, a Muslim, a Buddhist, and a Jew. I love that.
Well, I still remember the movie when it came out about him back in 1982, 83, I think it was.
Yeah.
And I remember that quote. As well as after there was a skirmish of what have you, and one of the two fathers showed up, and one of them was a Muslim, one of them was a Hindu, and the instruction that he gave to the Hindu and to the Muslim, the Hindu, you find a Muslim child,
right,
and you raise him as a Muslim.
There you go.
And to the Muslim child, you find a Hindu child, and you raise him as a Hindu. Now, whether they did that or not, I do not know, but they were wanting to atone for the bad that they had done in this sad little skirmish that went on.
A typical Gandhi with his absolutely inspiring humanity.
Absolutely. We are talking about the book Bless This Food. It's Ancient and Contemporary Graces from Around the World, 160 in this particular volume. And as our guest, Adrian Butash. And volume 2 will be coming out in a couple of years. We're going to look forward to that and have you back again to talk further. But before we do that, we're going to take a break and have you back following our break to talk more about Bless This Food. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Here we are once again here on the program, pre-Thanksgiving, pre-Christmas, of course. We're talking, though, about something that is pre and post. It's all around us when we get together. And I have to say, Adrian, Adrienne Butash, the author of Bless This Food, Ancient and Contemporary Graces from Around the World. Your website is?
Adrienne Incorporated.
Adrienne Incorporated. Okay, very good. So adrianinc.com.
Right.
And you can find out more about the book and about Adrienne. And you are into a lot more than just this book. You are also an artist.
I'm an artist, a sculptor, and I'm working on this second version of this book plus a whole other book. But yeah, I'm a creative guy. I've been in marketing and advertising in New York City for 20 years, living in Santa Barbara the last 12, and loving the time I have here without the hustle and bustle of New York City and all that.
Well, first of all, I want to ask you about, and I'm sure this question's been asked numerous times of you, on the cover are two pears.
Mm-hmm.
Why two pears? Why pears?
Well, first of all, they're food, but also as an artist, I like the shapes. They're slightly sensual, and it's hard to make food interesting. But I thought when I hit upon this idea, the publisher, New World Library, loved it. And so they're paired together like a couple, and they're appetizing, which is what's food's all about.
I love it. I love it. And of course, you, of all people, would be able to get away with that with a PR firm and a publisher, submitting your own ideas.
Yeah.
And I think that's fantastic. I sometimes, when I'm talking with my guests and I try to ask about the cover, oh, well, that was the publisher's idea. You know, you didn't have any input? It's your book.
Exactly.
Please. I mean, I know they're trying to sell it for you. I understand that. But, it is your work, and you need to be able
to have... Well, I'm a very hands-on creative guy. And, of course, it has nothing to do with the rank and authority. It's just, is the idea worthwhile?
Right.
And you adopt it accordingly.
When you started going through, I'm sure, the thousands of blessings that you had to go through, I'm curious, you said you've traveled around the world.
Yes, I have.
To thousands, hundreds of or thousands of different places. The atmosphere that you experienced when you sat down to meal with or break bread with the various peoples of these different cultures, was it pretty much the same kind of atmosphere as the blessing was given?
Well, it's a very broad question, but there's so many nuances that come to mind. For example, when I was in Tokyo years ago, and the corporation that I was there for, Shiseido, I was also doing marketing work for them. They wanted to honor me with a lunch. So I expected, two or three executives to show up, but the Japanese tradition is they bring many of the retired people there. So I was at a very soigné restaurant with 100 people from Shiseido. And they had a scholar sitting directly opposite me, a Japanese scholar. And he said to me, I love your book. Would you lead us in a prayer? So fortunately, I had thumbed through a Japanese prayer or two. But it's about as common as you can get, food, thankfulness, friends, and family.
So what you have discovered, and I'd like you to elaborate, is that we are more connected than our governments and our religions, and I say religion, and institutions would have us believe.
Good point. It's a cultural togetherness that we all share. We respect other cultures. And we know that they have the same notions, reverence for the family, reverence for the deceased, members of the family, thankfulness for food, and thankfulness for survival. I mean, it's as fundamental as that.
Obviously, you and I both being born and raised Catholics, we have many prayers that are stuck somewhere in the backs of our heads, including the prayer that I recited at the front of the program. I'm curious, is that in the book?
Yes.
It is. I haven't had a chance to go through all 160 of them, but I'm curious as to the one, if there is one, and I'm going to guess it's probably hard to pick one, that really stands out for you. And maybe it isn't even in the book at this particular point in time.
No, I do have one. It's a very fine question, Richard, and it's quite simple. It's non-denominational, and it's by Father John Giuliani, who's a contemporary alive in Bridgeport, and it's just four lines. Bless our hearts to hear in the breaking of bread the song of the universe. I think that's exquisite. It's a lovely grace, but it's so poetic and beautiful. The song of the universe.
It kind of says it all. I mean, it really does.
Yeah. Bless our hearts to hear in the breaking of bread, the song of the universe.
It takes us to conversations that we've had many times about listening to the still small voice inside.
Yes, indeed.
And following the promptings. I always put that in there because it doesn't do a whole lot of good to listen if you're not going to do something about it, you know?
Well, if you listen properly, it penetrates your soul and your mind, and you carry away things from people you respect, you meet, especially family members that you may not have seen for a while.
And you've already shared with us also about the fact that you've received numerous emails from people who've read the book, who've gone through and found these different prayers, and how they have impacted these folks and their families.
Yes, I'm very pleased to tell you that the book is used in several schools.
Really?
As a teaching model in elementary school and a high school. And one college is asked me to help them write a curriculum on the book.
Oh, that is fantastic.
So it's entering the society in a very educational way, which I like.
Did you expect this?
No, it totally came out of the blue.
I mean, we talk about, I've made the comment to folks before that someone came up to me asking me, what are you trying to do with your program? Change the world? Yeah. And I think, I just have this little radio show, you know. And here you are. I mean, you're impacting not just the minds, but the hearts of children who are, in a sense, already there.
Yes. And, of course, the sign language is a little game children can play. The ASL signed grace is a lot of fun. I must tell you just a very quick story. Well, I want to withdraw that because it may be too self-aggrandizing.
Well, it's entirely up to you. This program is here for you to share your story and how you have made a difference in your life and the life of the people around you. And your circle is, I must say, very large and getting larger by the moment. When you talk about going into educational institutions, you know, grammar school, grade school, that type of thing.
Right.
I often wonder how different our world would be. And again, when you use the term non-denominational, these prayers don't have to be representative of a particular faith or belief system to be impactful.
Absolutely right, Richard. The thing that I'm awestruck by is the reverence for food that goes back thousands of years, as I've mentioned before, but also the beautiful poetic twists of language. So just briefly, there's the Nahuatl Indians of Mexico. They are there before the Spanish conquest. This prayer is circa 1,300 BC. Now listen to this. Here with flowers I interweave my friends. Let us rejoice. Our common house is the earth. I am come to here. I am standing. Now I'm going to forge songs and make a stem flowering with songs. Oh, my friend, God has sent me as a messenger. I'm transformed into a poem. I love that. God has sent me as a messenger. I'm transformed into a poem. That was written in 1,300 BC. It's equal to Shakespeare, is my feeling on that.
I want to shift gears just a little bit to the subject of translation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these come from all of the different languages on the planet.
Right.
And as I have shared with our listeners and some of our guests, and we've gotten into conversations about this, and I use the Bible as my example of the original languages that these works were written in.
Right.
And my limited understanding of Hebrew and all of the 22 characters and what each of these characters carries with it, when you put the characters together, it has a whole new legend.
Yep.
And then sentences and paragraphs and then books, okay? How were you able to preserve the meaning and the context, the soul of these prayers, translating them from their original languages into English?
Well, I got them from experts. As a matter of fact, let me tell you a little marketing story about how the book came about, very briefly. I naively began to write 6-7 years ago to the heads of religion at universities asking for submittals. I got of maybe 100 letters, 2 responses. And I said to myself, what's wrong here? My answer was, they don't consider me a peer. So this is a little bit of marketing artifice, but I created a letterhead that said, cultural institution, me, president. I put down all my friends as board of directors, and it had a Corinthian column. It was very formal looking. And I sent it out to the a similar number of people. I got 95% response. Consult this. Here's some prayers from our family. Go to these sources. So part of the birth of the book was figuring out how to break through the solid wall of indifference. And that's a true story.
Well, I just think it's quite remarkable that and each one of us has the capacity to do this, to begin to have our life's purpose impact and enfold the lives of people around us. And we don't even have to try.
Yes.
If we just will put it out there. And I'm guessing that that was your perspective when the book finally, when you received the box in the mail and you open it up, oh my gosh, here is my work in print.
Yep. It was a joyous moment, let me tell you.
You know, pop the champagne. We'll say a blessing over the champagne first. And then we'll pop the cork.
Well, also, before the internet, now we have the book is available, as I said, on Amazon, BN.com. And I even have it in an iPhone app called Food Graces, because Blesses Food is too long. Mm-hmm. That's only 99 cents. But so I have distributed the book fairly widely in terms of the modern internet, and I'm getting responses there.
Well, again, I think it's fabulous. I know that when we talk about grace and gratitude, they kind of go hand in hand. They're basically from the same, somewhat the same root in terms of the
grazie.
Word.
Grazie.
It seems to me that there are many of our guests who speak a great deal on that and how important it is in our day-to-day life, whether we're sitting before a plate of food or not, to be gracious, to be grateful, to show gratitude in virtually every moment of our lives. Because, you know, in spite of all of the wonderful documentaries I've seen upon how the human body functions and works, it's like the thing in the back of my mind is, I still don't get why. Why does this thing work? To which I'm grateful that it works.
Well, that gratitude is what we bring when we are satisfied with food and drink. And over the centuries, the human race has memorialized that gratitude in blessings and other utterances. For example, in the Jewish religion, Pesach, Sukkot, they're all based on harvest festivals. So those important holy days are based on the harvest.
Yeah. Well, I know that our astronomical and astrological assignment editor, Beth McDonald, who we have on this program regularly, we talk a great deal about that when it comes to the sun, moon, and the stars and so forth, and how important that is in terms of the preparation. And certainly I can see where you don't just go out there and you gather up the corn or whatever it is that you're gathering and put it in the storehouse and then go in and light the fire and you're done with it.
Right.
I mean, there has to be, because I know how it feels to be working out in nature. You know, where I live, up above Santa Barbara, in a rural area on the hill, as I like to call it, it doesn't matter what I'm doing. And quite honestly, whether it's playing with our dogs or whether I'm doing some work in terms of clearing an area or stacking the firewood or even cutting some trees that need to be brought down and so forth for firewood, there is a wonderful feeling that I get.
Right.
Just in even getting my hands in the dirt.
Yeah, you're in touch with the earth and bringing stuff to the house.
And so I can see where these blessings would almost naturally well up inside of a person and be expressed.
Indeed. For example, getting back to Hebrew, the Hebrew word for covenant, brith, has its origins in the Hebrew word meaning to eat. So you can imagine the Hebrew covenant is based on the notion of eating. Another famous Jewish writer, Martin Buber, he helped us realize that our very table is sacred. One eats in holiness at the table, and the table becomes an altar. I mean, those are exquisite words. As I say, it's equal to Shakespeare.
Absolutely. We are talking right now with the author of Bless This Food, Ancient and Contemporary Graces for from Around the World. Adrian Butesh is our guest, and we're talking about this. I think it's a wonderful book, and again, as I say, I'm looking forward to Volume 2. I'm going to have you, if you would, because you've brought it in, and I want to give you the opportunity to use it. Maybe give us a few of these wonderful blessings and maybe preface each one with a bit of a description of maybe their origin and, I want to say, and their purpose, if you will.
Right.
So I'm going to, in essence, I'm going to turn the floor over to you right now.
Fine. There's a Chinese prayer that's 1,700 years old that is, yes, about blessing food, but it's all about companionship and is very contemporary, even though it's coming up to 2,000 years after it was written by Cheng Kung Sui. He writes, "I sent out invitations to summon guests. I collected together all my friends, loud talk, ample feasting, discussion of philosophy, investigation of subtleties, tongues loosened and minds at one, hearts refreshed by discharge of emotion." That's about companionship and friendship. I love that. He says his tongues were loosened, no doubt by an alcoholic beverage.
Well, I know that meals that we sit down to, especially today, are usually accompanied with some fermented beverage,
sure.
Wine, beer, or ale, or mead.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite, honey mead.
Yes,
which
yes.
I haven't had in a long time. I've got to find a bottle somewhere. very good. We actually made some not too maybe 8 or 9 years ago back in Phoenix.
Haven't done.
Just wanted to try it.
Honey mead. I'll have to get a bottle.
It's quite good.
Sample it.
Just get a little glass and you pour a little in there and you just enjoy it. It's wonderful. I have to wonder too if there isn't a little bit of, I want to use the word magic, so to speak, when these blessings are uttered. They were maybe someone created one saying, okay, every time we. I'm just going to use this as an example since the subject came up. Every time we finish a batch of mead, we are going to, you know, lay hands, if you will, on the bottles, and we're going to say this prayer and imbue
right.
them with this energy and so forth. Do you have, did you find prayers of that ilk, if you will?
Well, the reverence for food, whether it's liquid
or... So it wasn't specific.
No, it's so universal, it astonished me. And again, I expected a lot of prayers going back to the 1700s, but not thousands of years beforehand. And for example, if you notice in the Egyptian tableaus, they're always carrying food. So it's so specific to humanity.
Did you notice as you traveled through time gathering that there were any kinds of shifts or a decrease of prayers that were available, blessings that, you know, maybe, in other words, it kind of ebbed and flowed, or was it pretty consistent through civilized man?
It was quite consistent, and of course, often in another language, so I was not able to recite the prayer, but in the book I have... how you say bless his food in 19 languages.
I saw that.
So you can fake it with the book.
I was really astonished when I found out how many different countries there are on the planet, let alone how many different languages that are currently spoken. And that doesn't even address the languages that aren't spoken anymore. They're not lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is no country that exclusively speaks Latin anymore, but it's still a language that is used by some.
Well said. For example, on Just Bless His Food in 19 languages, you speak of Latin, Benedicte Hunc Sibum. Now, I don't speak German. I can do, but Segne Diese Speisen is Bless His Food. In Chinese, Chu Fu She U. And I've got 19 versions of this. So with this book or this page tucked under your napkin, you can say bless his food in virtually any language.
You can impress your friends and family.
Indeed.
In a manner of speaking. Now, I know you shared with us that, you know, as we both did, that, you know, we were both born and raised Catholic and went through the processes there. I'm curious as to your own spiritual path since then, because this seems to me like something that would have just broadened things out for you.
Oh, indeed. It gave me a wonderful appreciation and an immersion in cultures and religions of the world. So while I'm a practicing Catholic, I feel very connected to Judaism, Hinduism, even some of the Asian cultures. I have friends and contact with people. So it's become kind of like my own, quote, universal man, if that doesn't sound too ostentatious.
No, not at all.
It's put me in touch with people on a new level rather than, hi, how are you? What do you do? Where do you work?
Yeah, it seems to me that that would be an aspiration we all should work towards in terms of a better understanding of not only ourselves, but of our fellow men and women who have those different beliefs.
Yes.
And a better understanding of maybe why they think the way that they do or feel the way that they do, and so forth.
Well, food is the universal translator. So when you have meals with people of different cultures, to be able to address the issue of blessings and some of the background of those cultures with regard to their reverence for food is an interesting way to ingratiate yourself to those friends.
I've noticed, too, in the things that I have observed regarding food, that obviously in the years that many of these were written, they ate the foods that were grown in the region where they lived.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have things shipped in.
Right.
And yet today, we can pretty much get just about anything we want right where we are from anywhere around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to observe that in terms of the harvest cycles throughout the 12 months.
Right.
Because you can, in some climates, you can grow year-round, but you have to change the crop.
Right.
Because certain things will not grow in the fall that will grow in the spring and vice versa.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Seems to me that nature has designed a wonderful, I'll call it, filtration system for the human body so that it never gets bogged down in one thing. I mean, you hear people say, well, yeah, I know. I worked at this company for 10 years or whatever. Yeah, McDonald's for lunch every day. Year round.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not – no aspersions on McDonald's or anyone else. But, I mean, think about it. If you consume the same thing day in and day out for years, then how are you kind of cleansing the body and keeping it functioning? And you can't use the analogy of a car. I'm sorry. It doesn't work here.
Okay.
Putting the same gasoline in.
Well, analyzing the national eating habits is a subject that you're raising, which is a whole other book.
Yeah, certainly it is. Yeah. But it just seems to me that the people who uttered these prayers, that's the life that they lived. Mm-hmm. And is what kept them going in many instances. I mean, obviously, we talked about longevity in some of these civilizations thousands of years ago.
Indeed.
If you made it to 20 or 30, I think that was the senior years because you had disease and you had animals and so forth that you just didn't know.
Or enemies.
Or enemies, exactly.
Indeed.
I'm wondering, too, if you ever came across any types of phrasing, if you will, in regards to that whole aspect of battle. I know that most of this is done over food, but in terms of following a skirmish, following a battle where the two sides finally came together, if you will.
Great question. We've all heard of Tecumseh, the chief of the Shawnee Nation. He fought with the British and whatnot. Now listen to what this man said. When you rise in the morning, give thanks for the light, for your life, for your strength. Give thanks for your food and for the joy of living. If you see no reason to give thanks, the fault lies in yourself. Talk about a moral compass. Mm. I wish every grade school could read that.
Wow.
If you're not thankful, the fault lies in yourself.
Again, for me, it's, you know, being thankful just for the fact that the body functions. You know, to me, that's simplistic, but still rather astonishing. I mean, what is it that keeps it going? You know, that spark, that, you know, we are the closest thing to a perpetual motor, you know, that exists right now. I don't know of anything else on the planet that lives and functions the way that we do, as far as, you know, other animals certainly live. I mean, a tortoise, what, can live 200-300 years or something like that, I think. But still, it's the same principle. It's just
well,
extraordinary.
We're all hunter-gatherers, even if we gather at Hardee's or Whole Foods.
That's true. That's
and
true.
We're hunting in our cars now, but yeah. Not with the armament.
You know, as a Reiki master myself, I was trained to, if you will, so to speak, energize my food.
Yes.
Which was the equivalent of a prayer. There were no words that I was given. This is what you say.
Yeah.
And I have to wonder, too, if these prayers also, these blessings, maybe serve the exact same function.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
To energize
through the food and the togetherness of what experience you're going through.
Yeah.
If anything, I've been very gratified by the recurrent thought that's been emailed to me over the last 10 years that the book has brought us together as a family. I mean, that's high praise.
And that's quite extraordinary, too,
yeah.
Especially when we can see some of the drama that goes on in some families.
Right.
So
the notion of doing something for the family is a byproduct of the book that I wasn't quite aware of when I started to write the book. I was doing a somewhat intellectual, cultural gathering of food blessings, but a benefit of the book is the togetherness notion of the family and some of the good things with children where they can do the prayer, do the American Sign Language. So it's brought the child into the family in an unexpected way that I'm very grateful for.
You know, Bruce Lipton said on this program that the next evolutionary step for man is community.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as if it's really been lost. It just hasn't been focused on. We've been so focused on our individual self and all of that.
Yes.
And it's not that we're going to give that up. It's not that we're going to say, no, it's all about community now. No, you get to keep your individuality, your uniqueness, your creativeness, and now you infuse it into community.
Yes.
And your book is part of that process. I can see that.
Well, you know, the community at large or the community of your immediate family, we all are communal in that sense.
Exactly.
And protecting each other, loving each other, and sharing our bounty, whether it's meager or ample, is part of what life's honor is all about.
Before we wrap up the program, Adrian, I want to thank you for being on the program. I still have a few more questions for you. And thank you for sharing not only the book, Bless This Food, but also your story and your time here on the program.
Yes, my pleasure.
Who is Adrian Butash?
I'm a New Yorker, live 30 years in marketing, moved to Santa Barbara 12 years ago. I live at the Polo Club. I'm adrianinc.com is where you can reach me. I'd love to hear any response. And I do marketing, advertising. I'm working on the sequel to this book plus another book, which I'll send you a comp copy of when
it's
done.
Well, thank you. And though you've probably addressed it in the last hour that we've been talking, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through this work that you're doing now?
What particular part of the work?
The work of Bless This Food and sharing of these wonderful words.
My goal is to spread the word. You know, I'm not an evangelical about that, but I have a niche in the table blessing category. And there's some discussion of making a television show of the book with important VIPs reading from Graces. That's down the road. So, you know, I've brought my marketing skills to creating myself as a writer. I mean, I was not trained as a writer. I just had the notion for the book, didn't find it, and decided on how to get it published.
Mm. And how powerful are we as human beings?
From what dimension?
Well, I suppose let's take it in the context of what we've been talking about today in terms of changing the world.
I'm not sure we can change the world, but we can be exemplars of what's good about humanity. And that part of it, joining those people, whether it's Gandhi or whomever, who have been led incredible lives, the Nobel laureates, Mother Teresa, people who are really inspired and devoted themselves to the less fortunate. That, to me, is the highest calling.
Well, once again, it's been great having you in studio to talk about all of this and to share it with our listeners as well. And I encourage people to go to, and again, it's Adrian Inc.
AdrianInc.com.
And you can find out more about the work that you're doing, both on the book, Bless This Food. The subtitle is Ancient and Contemporary Graces from Around the World. And also can find out more about the other work that you're doing, both in marketing and so forth. But also, and I'm hoping I was looking at the right website at the time I saw this. You're an artist as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, among other things, I've created a line of sculptures based on the Steinway Model D Grand.
Yeah, I thought that was very fascinating.
And it's copyrighted. So the sculpture is in Steinway Hall in New York City, I'm proud to say. And I have a six-footer in marble that's 5,000-years-old marble, which is in the Long Island headquarters. And on 57th Street opposite Carnegie Hall, where they have the showcase for the pianos, I have a 36-inch sculpture there on a pedestal. So I've been very lucky to get, having conceived the idea. By the way, I was raised in a house with two pianos. My sister played the concert grand. My brother played the upright. I was a jock. I had no musical intuition. But here, 50 years later, I came up with the idea of doing the concept of a sculpture based on the Steinway Concert Grand.
And the reason for the concert, the Steinway, is obviously because of those two pianos.
Indeed. The music was in my head, but it became manifest in the sculpture.
Wow.
And the shape of the piano on the side is very sinuous. It's kind of interesting.
It's almost along the same lines as even the two pairs on the cover of your book.
You got it.
It has that curve in it.
Good observation.
I love that. That is wonderful.
Sensuality is also a subtle director for us.
Yeah, that'd be a
those are
subject
sentient
for
beings. You know, we touch, feel, and hear. And
well, absolutely. I mean, there are. I mean, you know, we as men, you know, we look at women and well, I'm an eyes guy or a legs guy or what have you, you know, but there are those subtle curves that you see, you know, that. As you say, using the word sensual, are very, very sensual.
Well,
and you don't even have to see the whole woman, just that.
That's true. The curved line is fabulous versus the straight line. And whether you're a caveman, you know, with your woman dragged by the hair, there's always been this very subtle and strong affinity for sensuality in the human being. Including in food. Food is very sensuous.
I think that that was epitomized to some degree in the movie 9.5 Weeks.
Okay.
If you recall that film.
I do.
Messy film, but it was interesting to watch. Well, once again, it's been great having you in studio to talk about all of this and to share it with our listeners as well. And I encourage people to go to, and again, it's Adrian Inc.
AdrianInc.com.
And you can find out more about the work that you're doing, both on the book, Bless This Food. The subtitle is Ancient and Contemporary Graces from Around the World. And also can find out more about the other work that you're doing, both in marketing and so forth. And again, my thanks to you for coming in and sharing with us. And I look forward to hopefully one of these days seeing some of your works, and obviously we can see them online.
Yes.
At the website. And again, it's AdrianInc.com. Once again, the title of the book is called Bless This Food, which in the back of the book you can find a page where you can learn how to say it in 19 different languages.
Correct.
Fantastic. Ancient and Contemporary Graces from Around the World. Adrian Butesh has been my guest. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next Saturday at this same time, love to Lal.